This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
Hi, it's Vanessa from The Fighting Stigma Show on Free FM. Are you a Waikato local? Do you have an idea for a radio show? Do you want to try your hand at being a content creator on Free FM? If so, check out our website on freefm.org.nz or find Free FM on Facebook and get in touch.
Kia ora everyone and welcome to your local Kiri Kiri Roa podcast, What Is Your Why? My name is Shivali and whenever you are listening to this, I hope you are having an absolutely beautiful day today. This podcast is run by the YWCA Hamilton, an organisation dedicated to empowering, inspiring and elevating women to achieve success in whatever ways that looks like to her. On today's episode, we will be delving into the world of access needs. So, Kim, hello. How are you?
Hi, Shivali. I'm good. How are you?
I am good. Thank you. So, Kim's brought her beautiful service dog in. Do you want to tell me your dog's name?
So, I've got a new guide dog called Arfi. So, she's a two-year-old lab retriever, and we've been together for the last month. So, it's been a new journey for both of us and in navigating the world together.
Yeah, she is so beautiful. Such a beautiful doggy. So, today, Kim is here to talk to us about access needs. So do you want to tell me a little bit about yourself, how you have started your organization Youth Able? Tell me a little bit about your journey.
Thank you. Yeah, so my name is Kim Dybul and I was born with a visual impairment that meant that I was able to see sort of 6 meters in distance, and then it has dropped over time. And also, my dad also had a visual impairment as well, so I sort of grew up in the world of access needs, in the world of really just giving everything a go. So very much for me, it was going to a school with some help, with some just trying to find out how I could navigate and be in the world. And I was lucky to have him because he very much showed me that I can do anything. If I really wanted to do something, I could find my why, and I could really push that as far as I could go. So I went to university and studied accountancy and realised it wasn't quite my why. And then I moved to New Zealand. So I grew up in Australia. I competed for a Paralympic sport over there called goalball. Goalball.
What is that?
So goalball's a Paralympic sport where you have three people on each team.
Yeah.
You have a ball which is 1.25 kilograms.
Oh, wow.
And you're blindfolded and you throw your ball. You basically block your body, the ball with your body. So the ball has bells in it. So, yeah, it's a fairly... it's a lovely, great sport. You learn lots of skills around communication with your team members because you can't see,
yeah,
and directions, and your lots of sort of very soft skills. So it's definitely done me good in the future, and travelling the world with it. So, yeah, definitely a huge experience. I was very privileged and lucky to be able to compete for my country. And then moved to New Zealand to do some stuff with it as well. So definitely...
That's incredible.
Yeah, so... what was my teenage years? They were tired at 21. It was sport.
Short-lived. But
yes, short-lived.
Very exciting by the sounds of it. What Paralympics did you go to?
So I didn't actually go to the Paralympics. It was a Paralympic sport, but I competed for Australia. So I helped our sport sort of, I guess, develop through in Australia. And I've now had one of my athletes I coached in junior in school, and she's actually gone to 3 Paralympics. So she went from London, Rio, and now just retired at the Tokyo Paralympics.
Wow, that's so incredible.
So I live vicariously through her.
Totally. Oh my gosh, I can imagine. One of my friends, actually, his name's Jesse, and he's from Australia, and he's just done, he was in the Paralympics for swimming in Tokyo. But yeah, crazy cool experience for him as well.
Absolutely. So yeah, definitely lived that. But it got me to America to do world championships and
holy moly,
Paralympic qualifiers. And yeah, so we did it on it because we were all non-funded, so we were also competing against other countries through... this is their full-time job. They get paid to live in residence and to play goalball all day, every day. So we were sort of ninth in the world, and we always thought that was quite a proud moment to be able to be out there and competing
yeah,
with them.
Totally. That is incredible. That is so incredible. So sort of tangent off that a little bit. We are talking about access needs today. For people listening that don't actually know what access needs are, can you explain that, please?
So access needs are, I guess, people who might not be able, so who might have a visual impairment, who have any kind of, and it could, yeah, any kind of inability, I guess, to access our current community.
Yeah.
So that could be a learning access need, it could be dyslexia, it could be behavioural, it could be physical. And in some ways, access needs also goes towards mothers with prams as well, around being able to access buildings. So it really is that inability, yeah, to access the community. And in some ways, it could be a disability, but it's really trying to look at, you know, how we're able to really strongly, you know, be fully inclusive and accessible within Aotearoa, and really trying to make sure everybody is able to fully contribute, because the economic benefits of everybody with an access need and actually being able to fully contribute is in the trillions of dollars around the world, because 30% of millennials have an access need.
Yeah.
And we've got the ageing population as well. So, and if we can all fully really understand our, really be into that community and fully access it, you know, our economy would be huge.
100%. I think that is such a big thing as well. I think that the society that we live in, you know, I think capitalism thrives off productivity, and because things are set up the way they are, so in such an ableist way, we're cutting out so many people from so many opportunities, so much missed potential. So I guess for you, my question would be, like, as a female with access needs, what sort of challenges have you faced in your life so far? Or any significant ones that come to your mind? Yeah.
So I think for me, a lot of the barriers, I guess, that I've also faced, and what a lot of people with access needs face, is that I was very lucky that I had my dad, who from a very young age has told me to go for it and to not let people stop me. And he was that real role model of, you know, the world is evolving, and but there are going to be people who will try to stop you, and that is what you're out there to educate them. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people with access needs that need that little bit of support and that intensive support to really get to know their why, to get to know their identity, and to really know that some of these conversations that people are having with them, or the stereotypes that people aren't having with them in their heads, and that unconscious bias is still out there.
Totally.
And actually being able to know how to have those conversations for themselves and for other people. So for me, even for me as a young female going into the... I remember my first job as an accountant, I came out of university... I went into university, and the lecturer pulled me into her office and said to me, nobody with an access need would be able to pass my course. Would you all pass the accountancy? Would you like to transfer?
You're joking me.
No, but it was done in a really... At the time, I went, okay, you know, this is really loving. Like, it wasn't done...
Right.
It was done in a really nice... Like, I see
sort
it was,
of...
Yeah,
with
sort
care.
Of with care. And I had actually been told that this lecturer had done the same thing to somebody else. So at that stage, I sort of said to her, can we have this conversation at the end of the semester?
Oh, okay, Karen.
And then we will... and we will, you know, we can have that conversation because... I kind of knew where my skills were, and that was where I could do things. So at the end of the semester, I actually topped, and not actually even on purpose, but I topped her class, and I think I got 96-something% in her in the basic accountancy class, because it was kind of like high school a little bit.
Oh my gosh, Kim.
The only conversation we had at the end of the term was, we'll see you next semester. So
there was no apology. She didn't even...
She did apologise. I think she did apologise to me in year three, but I also didn't take it personally. But I also knew that and this is where what I do now is so important, because I had built up some resilience around being able to do that. And I've had quite a lot of those conversations where I've had to really put on a steel hat and go, actually, no, this is what I can do.
100%.
Because I have some of the information behind me. And sometimes that takes a lot of energy. So that's probably a lot of my barriers. And sometimes being visually impaired, being able to work, so my computer software talks to me. So being able to have software that is maybe not quite compatible yet, because technology is still catching up on both the adaptive technology side. So really getting people to understand that IT and adaptive software can work together, and that they go hand in hand. It's not one or the other. And it's really just having those conversations sometimes and working through them. And sometimes a person with an access need can be the problem solver, because every day we have to work things out. And we also understand that things aren't necessarily 100% accessible for us now, but we want to make it that way and help, you know, people understand.
Yeah, and I think you see what can be, not what is. And I think that that's so powerful and definitely something that everyone needs to hear, and provide the space to include and create those opportunities for you. So I guess with Youth Able, you're trying to do that.
Yeah, so for Youth Able, I founded Youth Able last year during COVID, because and I also have worked in this space in the past, in the youth space, because when I grew up, I saw a lot of people who are my friends who really struggled within to find their identity and who were told that they couldn't do things, and then they stopped doing things. And also they couldn't understand why sometimes why I would do things, and that they just, and also their parents couldn't understand that, because they were being told by teachers and other people it was just too hard or it shouldn't be done. And I always sort of felt like this person who was in the middle. And then probably a few years ago, I also had another accident, had another health condition that was added within a pain space. And I really much realised that it was around sort of getting to know who I was again. And that development stage for everybody is the same, in the sense of actually knowing who you are, what you need, and being able to have that conversation. Wow. And the youth space, you know, every youth grows up looking for their identity and who they are, whether you're female, whether it's cultural, whether it's, you know, within the access space, you know, all those identities come together to make you who you are. And that could be your background. Whereas a lot of people, when you have an access need, they go, you have an access need first and foremost. But also, that's also not necessarily explored a lot of the time. It becomes kind of the, you can't do this, this is your box. So for Youth Able, it was really, I started that to help young people and their families really identifying what's in their community, what they can do, really what their strengths are, what their identity, and working with them in their own time to unbox some of that, take them out of those boxes and find what they can do, what do they enjoy, and actually start dreaming. Because
totally,
because it's so important for a young person to really go, actually I can do this. And you know, these might be my identities and my access need. I might need to ask for support, maybe to understand money, but I can still give over money. I might not be able to see, but I can still work because I have all this adaptive technology. And being able to have those conversations with people and actually be, in some ways, being proud of it. In some ways, you know, just being able to go, actually, I can do this, and building that resilience and helping other people understand what they need. And also being able to kind of know where maybe that line is, where they don't need to talk about it, because and that's also part of that education point of going, actually, I don't need to talk about, you know, my personal life, my disability, what I do at home for employment.
No.
It's only what I need here, because people become quite curious at times. So it's kind of, there's that kind of real overall basis, and to stop being hidden from, so it's a bit of both. So helping the community understand access needs, and that everybody's unique. My access need is very different to somebody else who might have the same access need, because my background's different.
Totally.
Whereas Yeah, and it's the same thing. It's like anybody's different. So it's having that conversation and having and knowing what your strengths are and who you are.
You said that so well. That is so true. Because, yeah, I remember us having a conversation and you said every single person with access needs, it's completely different. It's completely unique and everyone, yeah, has different needs. They need to be able to communicate because what works for one person is not going to be able to, yeah, work for the next. And I guess also what you sort of said about young people being able to feel like they can have autonomy and feel like they can do what they want to do, I guess because you had such a supportive dad, because he understood what you've been through and what you live with, perhaps for a lot of youth they don't have that. Where can they find support for those sort of emotion, for the emotional side of things, and finding that identity and that power and strength, you know?
I think, and this is also, I guess, also for parents who are wondering, you know, what can we do now? Because a lot of young people who go to school, they will be in school, and then they come to the end of school and going, well, what now? Really actually thinking, you know, really trying to reach out to the people that, one, that you connect with is really important, and starting to understand you. And also for the parents also to actually think about what do you do with your other children when they might have moved out of home or got to that age. And yes, your young person might have access needs, but what are their possibilities as well? There's huge possibilities. Sometimes we just remember that we look at their access need because we have to, because it's that really caring nature of parents. So really reaching out to YouthAble, and we're happy to direct you where we can to support you or other organisations to really help you look at how we can build that system around you so you can have the support into the future. And or other organisations, and we can also partner with other youth organisations or other organisations to make sure that you've got the right support, because it may not be an access or identity, it might be a mental health issue, it might be a health issue, but you're just not quite sure where to go. And it's really important that that those issues or those questions and, you know, curiosities, how, you know, that you connect with the right person. And that's probably my biggest advice, is really shop around. Yeah. Find the right person that you connect with within organisations, because that's the person who'll start building the voice. And for me, it was definitely my dad, but I've also had lots of different touch people in my life who've given me opportunities. When I've had my own, I'm just too exhausted, and what do? And I think we all do that, yeah, even yeah. like anybody. You all find those people who just get it for you and that will able to, you know, question you and challenge you enough that you're able to keep striving on what you want, and somebody who'll guide you to what you want, but also, yeah, and really, you know, making sure that independence is there as much as possible. And there's really doing somebody who does it with you and doesn't do it for you, because we want to make sure this is long term for your young person.
Wow, totally. That is so cool. And I love that you are so interconnected, that you can offer such a wide variety of support for young people. Off topic a little bit, but why young people?
So I think for me, for young people, there is at the moment, there's support for children who are in school and who are up to probably school leaving age, and there's support for adults. And the two systems within the access community are built around sort of a whanau support and then a person-driven support.
Right.
So there's, and they've really got very valid, really good supports, and Enabling Good Lives are looking at principles around, you know, making sure we put mainstream first. But it's also where that youth and that development stage where the young person is starting to build their voice and their parents also needing to sometimes take a step back in that person-driven and actually start forming a person, a support around the person, and looking about where they actually sit within that young person's life. So it's really, for me, it's such a crucial age in any young person, because they're developing their youth voice and their young person voice, maybe their access need identity, maybe their gender identity, and it's where everybody's, and they still also have this youthful hope and dreams, and they haven't necessarily been affected by the stereotypes out there. Sometimes their parents will be told that they might not be able to do this or can't do that because of some of the funding or the limitations that might be out there that they've had when they're a child. But I think this is such an important point where we can embrace that and really look for the possibilities. And if there's, you know, and there will always be, at this stage, you know, there will always be some things we need to overcome and problem solve and look around.
Mm.
But it's actually kind of, you know, knowing what's out there as much as possible, and really trying to see what we, you know, what systems and natural supports we can put in place to at least ensure that young people have the best life they can, so that they can then continue on the work I'm doing.
Mm.
Because it is about social change. It is about ensuring that one day Aotearoa can be 100% accessible in all aspects of life, and also and that we can all live the best life we can.
Mm, totally. And it's so important, and especially in like the technology sort of realm. Do you, just because I feel like a lot of people don't know about this, but are there technologies that you're aware of or that you use on a daily basis that are quite inaccessible for a large amount of people that would make such a difference to people's lives if they had the opportunity to get it?
A lot of a lot of people with access needs don't actually need any support, except for conversation. And I think New Zealand, the way we are sometimes, we aren't so curious. We are curious people, but we don't always want to be asked. We don't know what questions to ask and how to ask them. And that's what sometimes puts us back a little bit. And technology, I think sometimes even something quite small as having photos Facebook pages or documents which aren't actually scanned documents and sending them to people. And something as small as that and not being able to read it. So something that's scanned for somebody who needs a screen reader who can't see, for example, is, for me, it will just tell me that it's a blank page. So there's actually nothing on there.
Wow.
And that can happen throughout. And because sometimes people are thinking that's actually because they don't want you to copy the information. But then, and I very much understand, you know, the confidentiality around that. But actually for me, it becomes, I can't actually access it.
And that's a basic human right, you know. You should be able to.
Yeah. And then you sort of, and it's the same sometimes with websites that haven't quite had some of their accessibility checked. So there's organisations like Be Accessible who will audit your websites and just to go, yep, these are accessible. Because if you need to have that conversation about, I can't order food, I can't access to sign up online, you don't have that access to the thing. And then sometimes the conversations, because you've called up and somebody might be busy, they're like, do you have somebody to help you? And it becomes that, actually, I don't need somebody to help me.
Mm.
I would just like to actually access them. I would like to kind of be able to be independent as possible.
Yeah.
Because actually, it's something quite simple that I can do. And I don't want to, and it's really, I'm happy to help people, ask people for help if I need it. But in that case, you know, it should be reasonably accessible, or there's an alternative.
Mm.
Because we also, I personally, you know, I would love to help people to become accessible.
Totally.
And to have those conversations openly and where that sits, but not to be kind of just shut back down to, well, can you go get somebody else to help you who might have sight?
Mm.
Because that's a whole other process for me.
Yeah. So for people out here listening to this, what is the better alternative of that question? To make you feel empowered and still feel like you have integrity,
I think actually having a point, and sometimes it is quite, I know, you know, in certainly in small businesses, is having a point where you can contact people if you know, who might not be able to use the internet, maybe a phone number, and in that phone number, it's really, you know, how can we help you? How you know, and being able to fill in those forms,
totally.
For you, and actually going, well, how can, and then actually if you're having quite a few people actually going in, you know, really looking into accessibility, because if your websites are accessible for people with access needs, everybody, in general, a lot of people will be able to access them because access needs, having them accessible will make sure that access needs are included, and therefore other people who may just have a little bit of trouble maybe reading, or older people who may not be able to use the internet as well, or be able to access your building, will be able to come in. So it's so really true. Trying to actually just being open to it and curious and instead of sort of just going, actually we don't want to talk about it, or we don't, you know, you don't need to know about the access need, because the person's openly said, well, I can't use this, actually kind of just I guess in some ways it's showing that kindness, but it's not kindness, it's really just
it's empathy,
and it's actually about really trying to ensure that your business is getting as much as your economic gain and your economic that you can. And it's the same for services. It's actually, if somebody says they have an access need, for example, in mental health, you know, they can have a mental health issue as well.
Yeah, totally.
That they need to, and probably, and it's not necessarily about their access need.
Yeah, 100%. Wow, that is, yeah, so, so true. And I think it just really shows you how every single part of our life needs to almost be redesigned, where we include the perspectives of people with access needs, because that is just going to help everyone across the board. And how a lot of our processes at the moment fail to include those opinions and those perspectives.
Absolutely. So yeah, definitely being, you know, very much looking at everybody and including everybody for who they are. And for people with access needs, making sure that we can have their perspective included. But actually, people with access needs are like everybody else in a lot of ways, and being able to that they should be able to be within society and being able to access everything and being able to see what's possible. So yeah, being curious about what's possible and working with people with access needs around what, you know, how you can make your services better.
Totally. Well, awesome. We have run out of time. Thank you so much, Kim, for all of your insight, for sharing your stories with us. And thank you for the work that you do for our community in the Waikato. It is amazing, and it's so lovely that you have this service available to people. If people listening want to reach out to you or know people that would benefit from your services, how can they get in contact with you?
Excellent. Well, thank you for having me, Shavi.
Of course.
So people can contact me on kimdybel at youthable.co.nz, or go to our website at www.youthable.co.nz.
Thank you so much for listening today. If you want to connect with us, please feel free to check us out on Insta, YWCA Hamilton NZ, or on Facebook, YWCA of Hamilton. We'd absolutely love to hear from you. Until next time, take care of yourself and always remember your why.
For more episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.